Again, I guess housekeeping notes. Next week I'm not here. There's going to be a call it Kalim.
Neither will our chef.
Neither will our chef or be definitely will not be here next week. Unless I mean I'd love for him to be here, but I would be very surprised if he came here next week.
I thought it was a good clue that we got him. There must be other places that want him.
Yeah, well, hopefully he'll be coming before Shavuot. We'll get him next. Hopefully we'll get him. So it's not he had to cancel not because he didn't want to be here. But he had family obligations.
Of course.
The week right after Pesach. This is like Pesach ends on a Thursday night. So Sunday, I will be here. I believe that day is also Yom HaShoah. Typically, it's right after Pesach or very soon. I'm happy to teach. Is there A, interest for a class, and B, is typically there's an interest for like is there interest for doing specifically Holocaust themed?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine.
I don't think Rav Moshe. I think we've covered over the last 2 years the Rav Moshe Holocaust ones. I mean, I can look it up, but I'm happy to do like Shoot My Makim or any of the classics.
It was totally different.
How
long ago did he write anything on it?
Who, Rav Moshe?
Yeah.
60 years
ago. I mean, he wrote like 67 years ago, yeah.
Right, so it's... it's like a lot of other things, how things change over the years.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't go through the Holocaust in the same way either. He, you know, he
was here.
He was already
no,
here.
No, but what I mean is things that have come out...
Who's the guy who wrote the Shadows and Shuvahs, this radiation on the...
The main one is Shoot My Makim. He's, I'm blanking out his name now. He was
Oshri.
The rabbi of Oshri, yes, from Warsaw. Yeah, yeah, or of Oshri, yeah. So he's like the most famous one. He's like written Europe during the war. But there are others, interesting ones. So I'll look around. I'll try doing something you guys haven't seen yet. You know, I'm sure over the years we've seen a lot of them. But it's like every Yom HaShoah we do one of them. So, but okay, so we'll do that then. And that's going to be the week, like a few days after Pesach. The Sunday after Pesach. I think that's the 16th, I believe. Either way. Okay, let's continue. This is the last one of the series. The last 2 weeks, what we've covered is the topic of using non-edible items. What is our status in halacha? 2 weeks ago, we talked about it from a chametz perspective in terms of ingesting medication or vitamins or the like in terms of chametz, or we concerned for with ethyl alcohol, which is derived often primarily from wheat or other types of grains, but it is denatured, meaning it is actually added. There are other additives given, other alcoholic additives given to the alcohol. To ensure that it's not edible. And not only that, but I'll add as an aside, it's actually legally mandated that they add other things because otherwise, and it's in the best interest of the company, so you don't have to worry about like whether they're trustworthy or not, because otherwise the companies would be taxed. Alcohol is taxed very heavily in this country, as in most countries, and if the alcohol was in its pure, you know, edible form, then they'd have to pay for the products using the typical alcohol tax. So it's in their best interest to make sure that the alcohol is not edible, and that way a company like Purell or, I don't know, somebody sells pills, doesn't have to worry about the, you know, that really heavy tax and just can pay the standard sales tax.
When I was a dumb 14-year-old, I drank probably half a glass of Scope because I wanted to see how much alcohol was in it and whether it made any effect. You know,
apparently not.
I drank it. I didn't get sick.
Well, how was your breath?
That's what I had.
You came down by Lincoln Square. You got to be nuts to do that. So you
very dumb thing. I don't know what I. You know, like the only alcohol I ever had was wine at Pesach or on Shabbos, a little teeny bit that you got. So.
But
Scope
doesn't have alcohol.
It doesn't. I thought it did.
Right.
Maybe it used to, I don't know.
That's
my
why
body did, so that's why I drank it.
Yeah, there's a good like TV bit, I don't remember from where like a guy is like, this like crazy thing that I did, was I drunk or was I stupid? Or was I kid? Sorry, was I kid or was I drunk? That's what I'm saying, yeah. All right, so we talked about non-edible products in terms of chametz issues. And then last week we spoke about general medication in terms of, is medication considered to be food to begin with? In which case, would it be relevant? Do we need a bracha for it? Does it need to be kosher? And would you be able to take it on Shabbos? If it's a food item, then much more willing or able to take, you know, vitamins on Shabbos. If it's a non-food item, it's considered medicinal, then it'd be much more problematic to take it on, to have it on Shabbos. So that's kind of the So that's kind of the background we've talked until now. There's kind of one other, I guess, sniff, one other you know, addendum to this topic that I want to cover. And that's with regards not to medication and to food, non-food items, but it's specifically with regard to lotions, things that you smear on your body. And because the reason that I bring this all up is because even though you're not ingesting it in any, you know, you're not ingesting it, you know, orally in any way, there is a separate concern that perhaps by lathing yourself in these lotions, perhaps that might be considered a form of ingesting. Why is that true? Well, the source of it might come from Yom Kippur, because one of the five inuim on Yom Kippur is the inui of Sicha, right? One of the five things you're not allowed to do on Yom Kippur, one of the five things that, you know, you do as a form of distancing yourself from typical human behavior is not only not eating, not drinking, but also you do not lathe yourself in perfumes or other forms of oils or, you know.
That means it's not included with eating or drinking. You're allowed to be new, right?
Yeah. Shoes, yeah. Whatever. Okay. So the Gemara quotes.
It's not eating. It's another eating.
So the Gemara quotes. Yeah. So the Gemara in Yuma, and this is a different Gemara quote at a few different places, but if you take a look, this is on page 3, source number 12. Take a look. Again, I will translate every source. But source 12 says as follows. Minayin l'sicha shehi kishtia b'yom ha-kipurim. Where is the source that sicha, that anointing yourself, lathing yourself with oils, is equivalent to drinking on Yom Kippur. Aval bishin raya ladavar, zech ladavar. Even though there's no firm proof to it, we have a hint to it in the verses, shenemar, vatavo kamayim bikirbo, shemen ba'atmotav, the verse in Tehillim, says that the water came in his inside him like oil on his bones. Suggesting that just as water, you know, is ingested, so too oils, when it's put on you, is also ingested in some way. And indeed, we know modern science, although it's true that, you know, you can't fully ingest something topically, you know, through a cream, it is also true that the skin does breathe and that you do absorb, you know, minerals and oxygen and many other things.
Well, it must do, because they give you medication that you put on in the south.
So in many ways, like...
In the milk from rescue soup.
Yeah, so in many, ways, like we do know, you know, from so we do know scientifically that indeed, you know, lathing yourselves in different, you know, ointments or the like does constitute some form of what's called drinking. It's not really drinking, but it has some halakhic considerations. Yeah.
Your predecessor said that you're not allowed to smear on Shabbos, that you're not allowed to use deodorant.
This is not a Shabbos issue.
Well, this isn't Shabbos issue, but yes.
I understand.
Well, Shabbos issue is not because of this. Shabbos issue is because of Memareach, which is one of the 39 Melachot, is that you're not allowed to smooth things. So if you have, like, a stick of deodorant, and or let's say bar soap. So bar soap has a certain form. If you, you know, you use it, so then it kind of gets softened and smeared. So that would be a separate issue. Yeah.
But...
So deodorant, I assume he means a stick of deodorant. I don't know of any postic who says that a spray can can't be used. That I don't know of. I mean, it could be. I don't know of a postic.
But can we get back to the original question of why we're trying to draw equivalency between drinking and anointing if we see them as separate prohibitions, and benefiting from chametz is prohibited, anointing yourself is a separate prohibition on Yom Kippur? Why are we trying to then show them?
Well, the fact is, with regard to Yom Kippur, the Gemara compares sicha to shtia, anointing to drinking. And it's not just by Yom Kippur, but if you look at source 13, the Gemara actually compares it also when it comes to truma. When it comes to truma, you're not allowed to, for a non-Kohen, it's not allowed to benefit from truma. Right? Truma has to be only be ingested by a Kohen. And the Gemara says, source 13, Amar Zitra, lo nisra l'sucha shem an shal truma detanya, v'lechalu et kochi b'nei yisrael shirimu l'ashem, d'ravot asach v'tashote. Not only is it true, the Gemara quotes based on this verse, that you're not allowed to drink or eat truma if you're non-Kohen, but you're also not allowed to anoint yourself with truma. How would you anoint yourself with truma? Well, you have olive oil or the like. A non-Kohen is not allowed to use olive oil, you know, to, you know, smooth their skin or the like. So this is another place where you see that anointing has a constitute some form of drinking.
Like truma, what if it's one derivation over? Let's say you put your food, like they would store food, or like, you know, preservation of things. Like, olive oil was oil was a general was a preservation oil.
Yeah, but it's also used for salads. Not just no, but it's also used for like anointing yourself. If you would, you know, say, saying, you would laser yourself.
But if I didn't use it for anointing, if I use it not for myself, but for, let's say for my food item.
Oh yeah,
like, something that I oh. That also the Easter
Chulon too. Well, there's no Easter Hanah, I think, but it's I don't think there's a pure Easter Hanah for Chulon. I think, but you can't waste it though. So if it has to, be, if it would be consumed in some ways, then it would be problematic. I think this is my like off the cuff thought on it, but I'm not sure. So if this is true, if this is true indeed that anointing or lathing yourself in some type of liquid has some relevancy or some connection to drinking, then anything perhaps that you that prohibited to drink perhaps would also be prohibited from lathing yourself. In which case, something like chametz. Well, you're not allowed to benefit from chametz, but you're definitely not allowed to ingest chametz. So, for instance, is it, do I need to make sure that my shampoo or my soap is kosher for Pesach? Should I be concerned that my soap or my shampoo has chametz products? Not just that, but what about food in general, right? If generally eating is considered to be, you know, similar to lathing yourself, so if I'm not allowed to eat a non-kosher product, can I... You know, do I need to make sure that my soap or my shampoo is kosher? Can I use, you know, my Dove soap or whatever it is? Maybe I have to go to Brooklyn and buy my, whatever, I actually don't know the company.
Adley.
Yeah, that's buy them, make sure the special companies that are, you know, kosher and, you know, are kedat v'kedin, that they don't contain any non-kosher products.
Soap, you had to buy their soap for 2 minutes.
And in fact, we'll talk about this in a few minutes, but soap famously always has non-kosher products. It's almost always made from some type of... animal fat, tallow, or the like. It's almost even nowadays. Most soaps are made from animal fats. So
I haven't seen those Rakich bars anymore. Do you remember those with blue letters or red letters?
Oh, that used to be for dishwashing.
Yeah,
yeah. I think they quit making them when they
so
kosher liquid.
So this is what we're going to talk about today. This is what I want to focus on. And, you know, its relevancy both generally as well as with regard to chametz and Pesach specifically. So before we get to the topic, you know, more detailed, you have to first qualify potentially, because there's a very important conversation that's happening within the Rishonim. Source number 14. Peresh Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam, right, one of the major Tosafists, says as follows. Umutar adam masuch bechalav bechelev delo ashkechan de itzar sicha kishtia ela b'yom ha-kipurim b'trumah b'isturi hana. Rabbeinu Tam, right, one of the major Tosafists, has this very major qualification when it comes to this rule that sicha kishtia, that anointing yourself or lathing yourself is equivalent to drinking. He says this rule only applies when it comes to Yom Kippur, Truma, and Isuri Hana, things which are prohibited from benefiting. But everything else, we do not make this equivalency. We do not say that sicha kishtia with everything else. Therefore, he permits, for instance, you're allowed to lathe yourself in chelev, which is like animal fat, which is forbidden to be eaten. Chelev is part of the animal, it's forbidden to be eaten. You're allowed, though, to lathe yourself in that fat. There's no prohibition. It's prohibited to eat from it, but it's not prohibited to lathe yourself in it. In that case, and he explains that the only there are exceptions by Yom Kippur, by Truma, and by Isuri Hana, things which are generally prohibited from benefiting.
That includes
Pesach. Only if it's Isuri Hana for chametz is like only if it's really if it's like really chametz.
Oh,
yeah.
See, Isuri Hana, you mean any type of Isuri Hana?
Yeah.
So then when you lathe yourself, that's why you're doing it.
There aren't so many Isuri Hanah. Like, Isuri Hanah would be like Orla or Kilaim. There aren't so many Isuri Hanahs out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are, but I don't know if it's like the product of like Shor Nisko. Like there aren't so many out there of Isuri Hanah. Isuri Hanah is something that you really can't benefit from at all, you know.
Still surprised to mention Yom Kippur.
Or it's like the product of Avodah Zarah or something.
Since smearing is Usur anyway, I don't know why we need to say it's true on Yom Kippur too. That's like...
Well, that's what he's qualifying. He's saying that this equivalency of sicha kishtia is only true in these three cases.
But one of those cases, even though it's obviously usur anyway.
Well, because it's sicha kishtia, that's kind of like the derivation.
Not because
for it.
You're not allowed to smooth things out.
Anyway.
Yeah, well, that's
around the five inuyim period.
Well, that inuyim is derived from sicha kishtia.
It's like eating.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, the reason you're not allowed to lathe yourself on Yom Kippur is because it's similar to drinking.
Only four inuyim, and this is a type of achila.
Yeah, I mean, once you start doing that, then in some ways drinking is like eating, and bathing is a little bit like drinking. There's also, yeah, they're all kind of offshoots of each other in some ways.
I thought the reason for Sicha on Yom Kippur has to do with the initem et nafshotechem, that Sicha is pleasant.
Yeah, so the initem et nafshotechem is like the general rubric. The Gemara in Yuma, I wish I quoted the Gemara now, I know we were going to ask questions about it. The Gemara, though, tries finding, like, so what is an inui? How do we find out what the inuim are? So the Gemara says clearly food and drink are, but then what about the other things? We have to find sources and derivations for them. And when it comes to lathing yourself, the source and for lathing yourself comes from as a derivation from drinking, as an extension from it.
So the Zeich L'Dover is not so ubiquitously applied. The Zeich L'Dover is just...
Yeah, Zeich L'Dover...
Plus it is just very random.
That... Well, that's kind of the question that the Rishon are dealing with. It's like, when you say Zeich L'Dover, does that imply that it's really just, you know, hinted at, and it has no significance, and it's very limited only to Yom Kippur, or, you know, to a few exceptions? Or what others suggest, we're going to see in a second, no, Zeich L'Dover is just a question of the source, but ultimately, though, the two things are considered to be equivalent, and Sicha is Kishtia generally. So... As I said, Rabbeinu Tam is very makel on it. He thinks it does not apply generally, and that's why he permitted you to, you know, lathe yourself in chelev, in, like, non-kosher animal fat. As opposed to, take a look at source number 15, Tosafot Rabbeinu Peretz, one of the other Tosafists, and I could have quoted, you know, five other sources that say similarly. They disagree. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's not explicit, but it's implicit within what he's arguing, that indeed it would be prohibited even to lathe yourself with something, you know, like chilev. And he says as follows. He says in the middle, after the ellipses, he says, Mikan oser harav rav baruch lenashim masuch b'neim b'shuman shel chazir, keneged ha'or kedei lachzikam, dekeva delo avisicha shel tzar, el avisicha shel tanu gamrina disicha b'chal shtia, aval I avisicha tzar v'adai shari. So he quotes actually indeed in terms of very practical halachic psak. He says there used to be this practice, I guess in the Middle Ages, to lathe, I guess, your babies in animal fat in order to strengthen them. It's actually still true nowadays that often, like, infants have very dry skin, so you actually, I mean, you don't have to use animal fat, but they have, you know, modern products that use that equivalent. But it is still true that babies often do have very dry skin. So there used to be a custom to use animal fat, and Rabbeinu Baruch said it is forbidden to do so. If it was just about tzar, that they were actually in pain, then that'd be different. But if it's just in order for what's called tanug, in order for, like, it's pleasing, I guess, for the parents, for the babies, then it would be prohibited because you are benefiting. You're not just benefiting, but you're in effect eating and consuming, in some ways, non-kosher food. Kesicha is equivalent to shtia, even for non-isuri hana, even for something like food and the prohibition of chazir, of pig.
Does anyone mention a fear that if you're bathing yourself in it, you might come to eat it, or you might, if that's like a stepping stone by mistake or purposely?
Not that I saw. I don't think it's so common as, like, a fear. Like, I mean, maybe other people are different, but I have never tasted, like, the Dove bar soap that I have.
Well, it's more like in the olden days when they were using probably more literal, like, lard or oil.
Yeah, but I think even that, like, I don't think it tasted, like, right, I don't think, like, first, yeah, I don't think it tasted so great. Like, maybe if you would add it to your salad or something, but, you know, I don't think there's such a real concern. I haven't seen it. I'm sure maybe someone addressed it, but I've never seen that concern. It gets to be very strange behavior. Yeah. So this is kind of the machloket. Machloket then in the Rishonim within the Tosfos already. Do we extend Sicha Kishtia to cases beyond Yom Kippur and Truma, or is it limited to only them? And this is going to have a very, very significant effect on whether or not you need to make sure you get kosher soap or the like. So how do we paskin? So it's not explicit in the Shulchan Aruch, but the Shulchan Aruch passes as follows. This is in the Ramah in Hilchot Shabbat, source 16. Ramah says as follows: Ve'asur lirchot yadav b'melach ve'kol shekein be'borit shekorin zayif blau, o bishar chelev shinimuach al yadav ve'havei nolad. The Ramah quotes that on Shabbos it is prohibited to wash your hands in salt or in this type of soap or any other type of fat that is melted in your hands, because it is a prohibition of nolad. Because when not only there's two issues potentially. One is nolad here because you're creating something something liquidy out of something solid, right? It used to be solid, now you're making it liquidy. There's potentially also a concern of memoreach, of softening things. And the Rama says, therefore, it's prohibited from using, you know, bar soap or the like on Shabbat. What's the implication from this?
And it's not because of the...
Right, but what's the implication that it's prohibited on Shabbos? Therefore, it seems to be that it would be... What during the week? Would that make it sound like it's permitted or not permitted?
Permitted.
Sounds like it would be permitted during the week. Yeah. And that's the way that the Gra indeed understands it. Sounds like... the Rama is saying that though it's prohibited on Shabbos because there are Shabbos concerns, on during the week it would indeed be permitted. We're not concerned with the fact that you're ingesting through lathing yourself non-kosher products. And indeed, take a look at the Bir Halacha, source 17. So Bir Halacha is the Mishneh Berurah. He quotes as follows: "Ve'ayein bebir gagra shedato kedat harbe migdolei poskim de'af bechol asur kisticha kishtia." So he quotes the Gra. I didn't quote the Gra inside, but the Gra of Eliyahu, looking at his last name now, the Gra, the Gomni Vilna, said that he disagreed with the Rama, and he said, no, we shouldn't paskin like the Rabbeinu Tam, we should paskin like the rest of the Tosafists. We should say that indeed it is prohibited from benefiting by lathing yourself from non-kosher products, even during the week. So the Gra once said, at the very least, it's the Rabbanan it should be prohibited, but Rabbeinu Tam said it's permitted. And so the Mishneh Berurah is quoting this variant opinion, and so knowing the Mishneh Berurah, what typically would you say the halacha should be at this point? Well, usually the Mishneh Berurah is pretty machmer. Once there's like a debate on this type of thing, usually Mishneh Berurah is pretty machmer. In this case, interestingly, the Mishneh Berurah adds as follows: Mihu, nonetheless, minhag ha'olam nichos v'borat shelanu hanasit mechelev v'rak ez medaktikin zihirin bazeh. He mentions that the minhag ha'olam, minhag of, you know, from Jewish communities, is that indeed we use soap. People use soap, even though soap is derived from lard or other non-kosher animal products. He does add, though, as he typically does, if you can, you know, find not a kosher soap, then you should do so. Right? This isn't the Chametz discussion. This is a general year-round, right? Today, you're going to take a shower or a bath. What type of soap should you use? I mean, I do hope everyone does take baths or showers, and I hope everyone does. I do recommend it. And everyone does use soap. Yeah, and I hope everyone does use soap when they do so. What type of soap should you use? Well, Mishneh Berurah Paskins, ideally, if you can find the Brooklyn soap, find the Brooklyn soap. But if you can't, then the minhag is indeed to rely on the kulas and to use, you know, the Dove soap or whatever, you know, whatever product you use, you know, at home. That's the Mishneh Berurah. Aruch HaShulchan, or Yechiel Epstein, who's another one of the, you know, major commentaries on Pesach, he makes the following really important addendum to this discussion. He says as follows. He has a whole preamble that I skipped out. He discusses this issue. And then he adds as follows. Amnam, source 18. Amnam bibori chelanu shehu masriach ve'af lekelev ein ra'oi ve'ein lecha livgam yoter mizeh pshita she'ein bazeh chashash afilu libri'im. He adds as follows. It used to be, when they used to make soap, you know, back in, I don't know what century, but the 17th century, back in, you know, in some point in the Middle Ages or the late, you know, the early Enlightenment, at that time when they used to make soap, the soap really was derived from lard in a very direct fashion. And although I don't know if people consumed it, I guess it was consumable, so you really could eat it. But nowadays, and he's talking in, you know, earliest 20th century, and definitely true, you know, in the 21st century, the soap or shampoo is certainly not edible, right? I mean, like, feel free to eat it if you like, but it's certainly not, you know, nobody, I don't think it tastes good. Like, I don't think anyone's...
Well, when I was a little boy, my father once washed my mouth out with soap for talking back to him, and it's not edible.
Not edible. All right.
You ever talk back? Does it work?
Yeah.
He said, if you talk back to me one more time, and then I said something that I thought was witty, and...
So I guess it.
By the way, yeah. That's reportable today.
Yeah. Well, so I guess the 17th century washing your mouth out with soap was not as much cruel a punishment. Yeah.
I know.
So because it's no longer edible, it's already in the early 20th century. He says therefore it's really not a problem. Right? The whole discussion here, to begin with, is something you're not eating, but you're lathing yourself with, which is in theory edible. Is it prohibited or not? But he says everyone would agree, even the Gra, even those who are machmir, would agree that when you talk about something which is not edible, even dogs wouldn't eat this, that everyone would agree that lathing is not equivalent to drinking. It's just not problematic. And therefore, v'chein ha-minhag pashut b'chol tfusot Yisrael, asuch b'borid b'merchat v'ein potse peh u'mitzav seif. And therefore, the minhag is spread amongst all of Israel to indeed bathe yourself in soap, in your shower, and there's no one who, you know, who speaks up about this. No one complains or has any quibbles about this practice. As I noted, we quoted Mishnah Berurah in Aruch HaShulchan. This is something just generally about their psaks. The Mishnah Berurah is here makel. Like, at the end of the day, he is makel to the minhag. But he did have that addendum of, oh, by the way, you should, if you can find, you know, be machmir, which is pretty typical of Mishnah Berurah. If you can be machmir, try to be machmir. The Aruch HaShulchan makes no such addendum. And they're pretty contemporaneous. They live around the same time period. So the soap that they're both talking about is the same soap. They're both unedible. So actually, Yechaveh Da, source 19, who's the, this is Ravadi Yosef, has a long tshuva about this. And he discusses, he points out, this is a small snippet of it, but he points out, Mishnah Berurah Beir Halacha Katav, ta-ta-ta, he quotes Mishnah Berurah, and then he says, at the end of that, V'lo yarad lechiluk achronim bein chelev haroi lachila ubein sabon shenifgam me'od. The Mishnah Berurah does not seem to differentiate between soap, which is edible, and soap, which is unedible. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't seem to consider that to be a relevant factor. It seems that the Mishnah Berurah, though he is mekel, would recommend you to be machmir if you can. The Aruch HaShulchan, though, it sounds like even if you're in Borough Park, there's no need to go and buy the, you know, the kosher soap because you can just use the other soap if you'd like.
It all goes back to that original pasuk, you know, because it does, mine can hear both. How do you understand that? Is it something as palatable as that as water may be, or not?
Yeah,
that's how you. That's the
yeah. Part of the question here certainly is: are you in some ways ingesting it? You know, if you could ingest it, is it not? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely part of the source. So that's kind of the shorthand. If you want to take a look at,
in fact, this chimon doesn't matter at all.
Well, that's why it says Zecher LeDavar. That's
right,
why it's not
that's
up.
That's why I don't care.
Yeah, but that's the question of Zecher LeDavar is just a question of that. That might be a question of, you know, whether we have a proof for it, but it's not a question that the discussion is still going to be. Yeah, even if it's not like a full form proof, it might still be an indication that this is a real halacha. That we generally do make this equivalency. So the question is not just whether or not we have a proof for it, but whether the equivalency is extended not just from Kippur and Truma, but to everything else as well. So that's kind of the debate in the Rishonim. Take a look at source number 21. I quoted from the Star K. They have like an article online. And David Haber, I guess he's one of the article writers, post-game for them. He writes as follows. I'll come back to the Pesach thing in a second. But in the beginning he says as follows. For example, it is permissible for one to apply facial creams or lotions containing animal derivatives. One may even apply non-kosher ingredients to one's lips, like lipstick or lip balm. This is true even though one may inadvertently swallow traces of lipstick that mix with food. The traces amount of lipstick are batal b'shishim, right? There's very little amount that you're swallowing, and you're also not intending to do so, and he adds in the next paragraph. If there's no intention to swallow non-food products, example, toothpaste, mouthwash, floss, one need not worry about the ingredients. Nonetheless, it is a hitter to use kosher products if they may inadvertently be swallowed. If a product is intentionally swallowed, example, breast spray and breast freshener strips, the product requires kosher certification.
It goes to the achshavei idea?
Yeah. So when it comes to eating something, this is what we talked about the last 2 weeks, because you're actually intending to eat it, that's going to be problematic. If, though, you're not intending to eat it, it's just going to be unintentionally swallowed. So then the stock of the Star K is, if you can be machmir, try to be machmir. But if you're not even trying to swallow it at all, right, it really is like some type of, you know, hand lotion, hand cream that no one's going to be licking, then even for the Star K, they don't seem to mention the need to be machmir. Mishnah Berurah seems like it would be suggesting maybe you should be machmir. So if you ask, you know, Mishnah Berurah Jew, who's very machmir, you should find the product in Brooklyn, you know, and don't use your Aveeno or whatever it is. Find something in Brooklyn. But the Star K certainly is makel, unless it's something that may be intentionally swallowed, like toothpaste or mouthwash, which may be there. You should try to find kosher products.
Well, he says if there's no intention to swallow, e.g. toothpaste.
Yeah.
I find that very hard. That is already way back in your mouth and you have...
Well, you don't intend to swallow it. No one, I mean, most people don't try eating toothpaste.
It's too close. Are you worried about lipstick, maybe?
But it's all about your mental intention, and you have no mental intention.
You make sure.
Yeah, because the whole problem of achshavé is that by me eating something intentionally, I'm now designating this as food. It's not considered food, halakhically, but I'm making it into food by, you know, giving it importance. But if it's inadvertent, then I'm not doing it.
CRC is Colgate's good, Crest is no good.
So the CRC is more concerned about these concerns for chametz, especially. That's why it makes a difference between Colgate and Crest.
Or Schachter would agree with this.
Yes, or Schachter certainly would agree with this.
Also, Batel Beshishim doesn't apply to chametz, so that...
Yeah, not for Batel Beshishim. For lipstick, it'd be a different issue, yeah. To be clear, the concern for chametz is a little bit different, because we're not concerned... The concerns are generally true, the same about consuming or not consuming, but we're not concerned about the same problems. In general, we're concerned about non-kosher, like animal products. On Pesach, it's not just about non-kosher animal products, it's also about, you know, wheat derivatives or grain derivatives that we're concerned about.
You said batel b'shishim, and there's no batel b'shishim.
Lisa just said that, Lisa just said that too, So that wouldn't be true for lipstick, people would tend to be a little bit more machmir, although I don't think... As far as I know, I mean, I'm not an expert in this, but I don't think it's made based off of grain derivatives. I think it's usually corn, if there is anything, like adhesive agent.
Are we going to get into even if it was based off of wheat derivatives? Do you have to sell it, or you just not use it?
So in terms of selling it, it's kind of part of the same debate here. Can you own it, not own it? Kind of the same debate. Most poskim say... If you're going to be selling things anyways, you might as well just add it to the sale if you're not going to be using it. But some posts, you know, like, classic example, we haven't talked about this explicitly, but like, classic example, let's talk about Pesach in a few minutes. Let's play push on Pesach. There's an interesting story here that Source 22 about toothpaste. Yeah, it's an interesting story.
Charming.
It's kind of funny. A charming anecdote. This is, Chaim Jaffer has this like in an essay online. An anecdote that occurred in Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, known as the Rav here in this community, Shira Yeshiva University in the 1970s, is often cited in support of the common practice to be lenient in terms of toothpaste on Pesach. The Rav stated in Shir that toothpaste is not roi lechilat kelev. Even a dog cannot eat toothpaste. And thus, one is permitted to consume it on Pesach even if it contains chametz. The next day in Shir, and this is very believable. I mean, I wasn't there in the 70s, but I could definitely in 2020, I could believe this happened.
It's not meant to be literally taken. It's a theoretical.
Yeah, so in the next day, a student raises his dog. He raises his hand. A student raised his hand and explained that he conducted a, quote, experiment the night before. He related that he placed toothpaste in his dog's feeding bowl to see if his dog would eat it. And indeed, the dog ate the toothpaste. Rav Soloveitchik simply responded, "Your dog is crazy."
It says he doesn't.
Yeah.
He doesn't.
This story illustrates the ruling that we cited last week, that the standards of eatability are not determined by aberrant behavior. Right? And I guess a dog can also have aberrant behavior.
The other derivation of the story is, who are you going to believe, your dog or me?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like when we went to that example of very, very burnt food, and only if you consider... Like, no human would eat it, but achshavé applies because you're suddenly elevating to the status. Isn't that aberrant behavior that no normal...
Yeah, so, I mean, I assume the Rav would say that, yeah, if your dog likes toothpaste, then don't feed it non-kosher toothpaste on Pesach.
Got it, for that specific dog.
Yeah, for that specific dog. But for everyone else, it's not a problem to use toothpaste just to, you know, clean your teeth.
If you were to eat toothpaste as a human being...
Then it would be problematic, yeah.
Alan, you're not allowed to have mouthwash.
So how have we designed Achilas Kelev? That he eats and dies, or that he wouldn't go near?
I think you wouldn't eat it. I think the point of Orlechel Kelev is that dogs would know not to eat it.
Would avoid it,
yeah.
Not that he eats it and would die.
No, dogs could eat, you know, if there's like poison in it, they still won't eat it. They might not necessarily know. No, specifically about like non-edible, because it looks disgusting, it's putrid or something unlike. Yeah.
Looks like that.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
Most dogs will try to eat almost anything, but they may not eat it once they taste it.
Yeah. So let's talk about one other case. Before we get to Pesach, there's one other case we can talk about. This is a chuva from Rav Moshe, since ostensibly this is supposed to be about Rav Moshe, but you know, he doesn't have chuvas on every topic here. But he does have a topic that's related to this, which is not about eating something, but is about using non-kosher dishwasher soap. Right? I actually don't remember what the main dishwasher soap is, but...
Cascade
or the like.
Finish.
Yeah.
Those are the two.
Yeah, so if you use, you know, if you after Shabbos, you decide you're gonna wash your dishes in the dishwasher. can you use non-kosher dishwasher soap, which is now going to be used on your dishes? And
I always thought everybody had to use kosher dishwasher soap, like you have to use kosher detergent when you wash your dishes by hand. Nobody uses non-kosher
dishwasher. Cascade and Finish both have OUs. So.
Yeah.
Right.
So this is part of the question.
This was early enough to not have rule.
This would be the same question about dishwasher, about soap in general for, you know, washing dishes in general, right? Can you use non-kosher? You know.
Yeah, but before that even,
dish soap.
Can you kosher the dishwasher for Pesach?
So that he doesn't talk about here.
But that's a bigger deal.
That's a bigger deal for Pesach, yes. Yeah, he doesn't talk about that here. Rav Moshe tends to be pretty machmer for dishwashers. I'll paint that as a... Yeah, Rav Moshe actually tends to be pretty machmer. He's actually the source for why many, if poskim, are reticent to be made to allow you to kosher your dishwasher, not just Pesach, year-round. Yeah. It's usually because of Rav Moshe being machmir.
What do you mean in terms of year-round?
Fleishik and
milchik. Not just fleishik and milchik. If you rent a new apartment,
and the dishwasher
is already there, Okay. Can I use a dishwasher? Yep. Can I kosher it in some way? Like I can kosher my oven. Well, if you ask most modern Orthodox postgame, they might not be so quick to say yes, mostly because Rav Moshe said no. It's a big question. Why? We can talk about this at a later time, but it's not clear why Rav Moshe was so machmir, especially since he was making on other things. It's not really consistent within his own stock. It's a really, really big question. Not everyone in Israel is as machmir about dishwasher. It's a whole big question of itself that relates as well to chametz. It's ask your modern Orthodox rabbi, your posek, if you like, for dishwashers. It is a big question.
It's not a big deal in this case.
So that's a part of the question. Yeah, there's a whole sorts of issues about dishwashers, and there were cracks maybe in the plastic.
Get new racks. That's the thing.
The filter. There's all sorts of questions.
It doesn't have to be metal. If it's not metal, you can't kosher your plastic, right? So.
The rubber cover, yeah.
There are all sorts of questions about it. Yeah, we can talk about dishwashers. I'm happy to talk about dishwashers more extensively if you are interested. But either way, with regard to the soap, let's say your dishwasher is kosher for Pesach. You have a nice 5-town Kinet kitchen. You have 3 kitchens. You have an extra one for Pesach. And you have our liquid or whatever it is. We have a kosher for Pesach. Dishwasher. And so you're not worried about the dishwasher being kosher or not, but I need to find out what type of dishwasher soap can I use. So Rav Moshe has this true. It's actually not about Pesach. It's actually general year round. But borich yosin me'alkol sheba mechilev shepagum me'achilat kelev imutar linkot kelim bo. Can you use non-kosher dishwasher soap in order to wash dishes? This is written in January of 1966. He writes as follows. How do you make the alcohol? He actually explains how you do it. You cook the fat, the animal fat, with various forms of, I guess, acid, which are meant to break down the animal fat. And then what you do is actually, once it's already been cooked and it's broken down, you actually remove the edible parts. At that point, then you distill it through different mechanisms, and you take the non-edible parts and you cook it further through metal and some type of gas. This is how he's explaining it. And this alcohol at this particular moment is poison. It is poisonous for most living things. Can you use it to wash dishes? If I'm going to be truthful about this, I see no prohibition. Only something when it comes to eating is it going to be prohibited, based on the concept we've talked about the last 2 weeks of achshave, of me considering something which is not edible into food by eating it. However, and he quotes a few cases. I'm going to skip the cases here. He quotes, skipping to the ellipses on the next page. V'im kein, kol shekein, kishaleka. He He concludes, when it comes to dishwasher soap or the like, because in no way are you trying to eat dishwasher soap, and if anything, the fact that you try cleaning your dishes with it proves it's not edible. The fact that you're trying to clean it, I'm not entirely sure I get this argument, but the fact that it's used as a cleaning product means it's not edible, and then that's the goal of what your purpose of what you're doing. Yeah, I'm not sure that's necessarily always true, but that's his contention. Therefore, it's clearly not meant to be eaten, and Ramosha thinks there's no problem with using non-kosher products for your dishwasher soap.
I'm surprised because it's on like a plate, you would think he would want it edible. You're not going to stick poison stuff in your dishwasher. So.
Well, the point is you're really not eating it. You're not eating it at all. Like, you're not intending to eat it.
Another point is that the dishwasher does a thorough rinse.
Yeah, but I think this is true even... I mean, I could be wrong, but I'm fairly certain Ramosha, the same cool would apply also for dish soap generally. I think Ramosha is saying you don't need kosher dish soap because you're not going to ingest it. And, you know, even if there's like small remnants of soap left on your plate, most people, say the normal people, not the crazies and the crazy dogs, you know, don't want to consume the soap. Like, no one wants soap left on their...
Right.
On their
purposely go out of your way to try to remove.
Yeah, you're probably re-rinsing it to make sure that soap is off.
There must have been an opposing point, like David pointed out, even before they had liquid dishwashing soap that when you wash it by hand, they used to have those Rokeach bars that
blue
that
and
people
red
used
one,
to use in the 50s. I remember my mother used to wash dishes with those balls.
Yeah, so this is...
people did not use non-kosher soap, even though with Moshe Paskin that you could.
Yeah, so now this is...
Jews always... we have a lot of instances where Jews aren't following halacha. It just feels
better. In this case, they're being more machmir than what he says the halacha is. And usually it's the other way around. Jews don't follow the...
So this is one of the interesting cases. I mean, the last 3 weeks we've kind of talked about that there's kind of been a shift in different halachic practices. But there certainly was in the 50s and 60s and 70s this very, very strong, not just custom, but real like sense of what Orthodox Judaism looks like is to ensure that all of these products that we eat, especially on Pesach, we have to make sure that they are kosher. So the medication has to be kosher, the soap has to be kosher, the shampoo has to be kosher. All of these products need to make sure they're kosher. And the truth is, it's not entirely clear from the halachic sources this is true. This is kind of what I'm trying to show you, that yes, it's true, Mishnah Brura, does seem to be concerned when it comes to dish soap. You know, certainly parts of it are getting on your hands. You are lathing yourself in some ways. I'm not sure even Mishnah Brura thinks it's really lathing yourself, because it's, no one lathes themselves in, in dish soap. But it's, in theory, it's like going on your hands, it's being absorbed a little bit. But, so maybe there's reason to be machmir. But you're right. Ultimately, there's no real need to be machmir. Same thing with shampoo.
What's the old use?
There's no real problem to be when it comes to. There's no real need for kosher, shampoo or soap.
So in the big list that we get every year from products, some of the OUs,
this is for Pesach. We haven't gotten the Pesach yet.
Oh, sorry.
This is year round.
Okay.
When it comes to the OU, it's just worth noting the OU does get. There are people who are machmir. I don't think if you ask me, and I think most modern Orthodox postgame. You do not need to be machmir when it comes to year-round these type of concerns. I think there was a lot of precedent not to be worried about it, but there are people who are concerned, and that's why in Brooklyn you can find, the Mayim Chaim equivalent for shampoo or soap or the like. You can find them. And it's also true that when you ask, but why can't I find OU on my soap or the like? It's because the OU is also a business, and sometimes these companies know that having a kosher symbol, helps their products. It looks like it's healthier. It's kind of like the equivalent of having like vegan or non-GMO on your product, even for the non-Jews. And so the OU is like, sure, like pay us a fee and we'll like gladly that you put an OU on our product. We don't think you need to have an OU on it, but we'll add it on because, you want to have an OU, we're going to let you have an OU on it. So that's why you can buy, plasticware that has OU on it, even though you're not consuming.
How about aluminum foil?
Aluminum foil, you can find an OU on it, too.
No.
Make a big deal about the schmaltz that they clean it with.
The grease. It was Rabbi Cohn that said about the grease using the machinery.
Oh, yeah?
That's what I call schmaltz.
You have to have an OU on.
So I think it's the same problem. I would guess. I mean, I have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure it would be the same thing. Like, I think no one's consuming aluminum foil, and even if you're using it to wrap food, it's, like, really, really minimal. It's really definitely batel b'shishim at that point. But, yeah, you definitely could be machmir, and I think that's part of the debate that's historically...
They all have hashgacha, I think.
Some do, I think. Well, I think you can find.
The Costco brand does.
Some of them do, some don't, yeah. But I don't think you have to necessarily go out of your way. But, you know, if you want to be machmir, you know.
I like this Tim Panta says, does not require tefillah. If you see some of the reckless Hershel Shechta says, if you're going to reuse it, it needs
It's true. If you do reuse it, you would have to do tefillah.
They had a mikveh there. You could double it right in the store. But
yeah.
It looks disposable, but if you use it twice.
This is all with regard to year rounds. When it comes to shampoo, soap, dishwasher, aluminum foil, all these things, in theory, you're not consuming it. You're not intending to consume it. If you do consume it, it's very accidental. There's really no need for it to be kosher, at least according to most of these postmas we've shown. But, you know, there are those who disagree. I'm not trying to show you, you know, there is reason to be machmir. You can make your decision, you know, your informed decision now. When it comes to Pesach, it's a little bit trickier because on Pesach, we're not just concerned about non-kosher food items. We're also concerned about wheat derivatives or grain derivatives. And as we talked about 2 weeks ago, a lot of products come from ethyl alcohol. And ethyl alcohol is often derived, well, nowadays in America, it's actually much better because it's
Corn dominates
the market. But especially in Europe, let's say, or what used to be before corn dominated the American markets, it used to be often derived from wheat. In which case, something like, you know, your spray deodorant actually has chametz in it. So we talked about this 2 weeks ago. What is the status of, you know, spray or alcohol that's found in denatured alcohol that's found in these type of products? So what we talked about was this discussion in the postgame about whether or not something which is unfit for human consumption, but according to Rav Moshe, something that could be made for human consumption, right? You can indeed, if you're a chemist or if you know how to buy the right things, you can, you know, not so difficultly, you can change it, you know, back into an edible form. Does that mean, does that mean that at this precise moment it is a problem, even though right now it is unedible? Right now, my spray deodorant is not edible, but I could do something fairly easily and make it edible. Is it now problematic? So we saw there was a significant debate within the postgame, indeed, about these type of products. Which is why, if you take a look at source 21, this is the star case Psak, and I'll talk about in general for Pesach Psak after this. But the star case is as follows. On Pesach, one may not consume, own, or derive benefit from items that contain derivatives of chamishes mine dagan from the five grains of wheat, grains, wheat, barley, spelt, oat, and rye. This halacha applies to all such items that are fit for human or canine consumption, including perfume or other products containing ethyl alcohol. Therefore, one may not use such products on Pesach until the source of alcohol is determined. According to halacha, if makeup is unfit for human and canine consumption, it may be used on Pesach even if it contains chametz ingredients. Nonetheless, many individuals are strict and avoid using creams, lotions, and liquids that contain chametz. This is especially true for lipstick, which one may inadvertently swallow. In other words, the postgame tends to differentiate the following ways. Number one, we kind of talked about, there's a halacha question about, in general, something that has ethyl alcohol, are we concerned about it being chametz or not to begin with, right? Because it's not edible at the moment. It's not edible at all. Like, it's the fact, as I mentioned in the beginning, legally, these companies, in their best interest, is actually to make it inedible so they aren't taxed this very high price for edible alcohol. So they actually make sure it's inedible. But it can be edible. So there's a whole big question about whether it's edible. So we talked about medications and the like, which you actually are ingesting. That was kind of what we talked about 2 weeks ago. Here, what he's talking about now is not just medication, something you're ingesting, but something that you're not ingesting, you know, orally, but even like a topical cream or like a deodorant, which is sprayed on your body, or, you know, a soap or shampoo. Anything of those sorts, right, is that going to be a problem? So in that case, we're not worried about you eating them, right? No one's eating, you know, deodorant, but you are spraying it on your body. And as we saw, there is potentially concern to think about the fact that spraying something on your body or anointing it may be in some ways equivalent to drinking. And so that's why it's a big debate. Because in addition to the previous debate about whether or not this is problematic to begin with, it's also a question about whether or not, you know, lathing yourself in these types of, you know, chametz dik materials, is that going to be problematic? Which is why, if you look at some of the lists, like the CRC list or the like, they'll tell you, like, this type of perfume or this type of deodorant is kosher for Pesach, and this type of deodorant is not kosher for Pesach. And, you know, you have to look through the list because you have to make sure that your deodorant or your perfume or whatever your, you know, your bodily product is not contain, does not contain any grain-based derivatives. Other postgame, and this is the way that they seem to be postgaming here in Star K, seem to be saying that if it's a topical cream, if it's anything which is not going to be ingested, then there's no need to be machmir. You can indeed use it. You can use your regular deodorant on Pesach. However, they do add, and I think this is probably most postgame would agree with this, if it's something that you may inadvertently eat, then probably better not to have it. Why? Because even though it's true that we just said earlier, right, in the same Star Cape stock, they said that when it comes to, like, lipstick, in terms of kosher, we're not worried about, like, typical year-round that your lipstick is kosher or your lip balm being kosher because you're inadvertently eating it. That's not going to be a concern because it's batel b'shishim and it's not really achshir, you're not planning on eating it. When it comes to chametz, number one, as I've mentioned a few times, chametz is not batel b'shishim, and number two, when it comes to chametz, we just tend to be much more machmir, concerned about the fact that you're ingesting chametz at all. We're much more worried about it. So anything that's going to approach your mouth in any way, better to try avoiding having chametz. But that being said, if you don't have, you know, any other lipstick or lip balm, and it's Pesach, and you really want, there's a tzorach, I think there's probably is a lot of room to indeed even use, you know, these type of products on Pesach. But this is kind of where the whole debate about toothpaste would come up with, that would come up in mouthwash and the like.
A new tube or a new bottle, yeah, right? I mean, let's say somebody uses lipstick, a woman, obviously. Well, there are some men who use lipstick, but they're not usually in, care about halacha. But in any event, if you're using the same one you use all year long, isn't there a possibility there may have been chametz got on it?
Yeah.
Because it's on your mouth.
So yeah, which is why most postmen would say that you should get a new one.
Right.
Do you really need a new one?
As a community,
we tend to be pretty machmir on these things.
You use?
If we lived, you know, in a time where we're poorer and people didn't have as much money, I'm not sure how people would be as insistent to be getting new ones. Nowadays, you know, how much does it cost to get a new thing of lipstick or a lip balm? Get a new one. It's not so expensive.
So,
I wouldn't say anything about, you know, perfume can be very expensive. So maybe sell it for Pesach if that's what you're going to be doing. But you know, lipstick is not as crazy, you know, even the fancy ones, as far as I know.
One, batel b'shishim doesn't count, and also karet. There are two issues with Pesach over regular kashrus.
Yeah.
It's karet and batel
b'shishim. Yeah, and we just tend to be very machmir for Pesach, yeah,
so
because
would,
of that.
What would Rabbeinu Tam say in all these cases? In other words, he was making all year round. What would he say about Pesach?
Well, there are other positions where you're in a time where you're at the Pesach, but I think he'd be much more mekel.
Yeah,
I think he wouldn't be worried the same way. But, I mean, achshavei, it's a whole question about eating. But, I hope I'm kind of giving you, like, the broad spectrum here. You know, in general, other community, we do tend to be pretty machmir, and I think there are a lot of great things about that we really care about our kashrut, and we try so much to get rid of chametz, and all of the, you know, chassidish shavuot about chametz being associated with, you know, laziness and mitzvot and all those sorts of things. I think that's a great testament to how far, you know, we go in terms of making sure that chametz has really, you know, gotten rid of our midst and from our possessions. That being said, you know, as a community, we also tend to be more machmir than maybe we always have to be, and there is more room to make ill here, and I kind of tried explaining some of the issues when it comes to things which are ingested, you know, medication or the like, as well as things which are not, which are topical creams, which are slightly different issues, and kind of here's like kind of the broad spectrum, both in terms of general kosher, as well as specifically Pesach issues. Do we have to be concerned with using these or owning these on Pesach or not? Any questions so far? Any questions? All right, we're going to end here. Have a Chag Kasher, Pesach Sameach. I hope everyone has a great Pesach.